nobody dared to meet him in an open press debate. He was nominated by the folks from every state. Yes, a monkey was the president, though maybe not the first.
She's back. Miss Amy is back with an all-new Living Way Out Here on the Survival Circle Network. Join Amy for an uplifting hour of fun on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday evenings at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on Survival Circle.
Like to brag, but we're kind of proud of that ragged old flag.
You see, we got a little hole in that flag there when Washington took it across.
Does this country remind you of the America that you grew up in? Do your children enjoy the same freedoms that you did when you were young?
Do you think that you can take me on? You must be crazy. There ain't a single thing you've done that's gonna faze me.
Just how far are you willing to be pushed? When are we gonna put our collective foot down and tell the tyrant, get off of my back? Hi, I'm Cope Reynolds, and if you're tired of the same old sugar-coated mush-mouth monologue of talk radio, join me for The Shooting Bench, Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Central. Guns, self-defense, survival, current events are just a few of the topics that we'll discuss on The Shooting Bench, and we're going to start discussing them right now.
Have you forgotten?
All right, here we are, and welcome to the Shooting Bench. 23rd of December. Wow, it's getting close. Another couple of days, day and a half here till the fat man comes. And I hope everybody's ready. We're never ready, but we're a little more ready today than we were yesterday. Glenn Tate's going to be my guest live and in living color here in about 4 or 5 minutes. He's going to give us a call. And author Glenn Tate is the author of 299 Days. Great, but all I've read is the first one. I'm going to get the other ones. After reading the first one, I can tell you that I have a living connection here with the star of this book. I don't know if he's the same guy goes through all 10 books or not, but this first one was most impressive. I have a very feel like a personal connection here with this guy in this book. So there's we're not going to talk about the book too awful much because we don't want to spoil it for everybody. We'll kind of beat around the bush about it a little bit and find out some of the other things that are behind the writing of this book. These books, there are 10 of them. And let me check and make sure that we got sound here on the chat room. If you guys give me see by a show of hands here. Okay. All right, we've got good sound. Looks like everything's good. So here in a few minutes, we'll get Mr. Tate in here with us. We will not be on tomorrow after we finish with Mr. Tate today. Amy and I will be with you here for a while for our annual Christmas show. This kind of a relaxed show. And there comes Mr. Tate right now. So let me catch this, and we'll just get on with it here. Hello. Hello.
Hey, Cope.
There he is. Yes, sir.
How are you?
I'm doing well, Mr. Tate. How are you doing?
Good, good.
Good. We're glad to have you in here. We got everybody chomping at the bit and ready to go here. So we're glad you called.
Hot dog. Hot dog.
How's the weather? Are you guys getting a bunch of snow up in that part of the country?
Yeah, it's about 39 where we are down sea level, but there's getting some snow in eastern Washington, and it's pouring down rain in 39, so it's typical western Washington, you know, winter weather. So, and it gets dark. You know, the street lights come on when it gets dark, when it senses darkness, and it's not dark, but 3:45 in the afternoon, the street lights come on. That's how up by the North Pole we are, so it's crazy.
Yeah, I'm not a real big fan of that part of Washington. I like it over there around Yakima and over there on the Idaho line over in that area, around Palouse and over there. It's a great country.
Yeah, eastern Washington's amazing. Yeah, I don't know why I live in the heart of darkness here in Olympia, you know, the capital of Washington State and the middle of the live zone, but I don't know. God put me here, so here's where I am.
After reading your first book here, I have to wonder, what in the world are you doing there? You got to be looking for a way to escape here before too long, I'd guess.
Well, you know, I mean, in all seriousness, a bunch of things have happened and placed me here and placed my team here and the real cabin's here, and I think I'm supposed to be here. And now, you know, if things get hairy, I'll do the right thing. But at least for the foreseeable future, and I foresee things getting nasty and not necessarily, you know, having to take off. But I will if I need to, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's good. Someone that, you know, listens to that inspiration instead of just taking off on emotional cues, you know. I think that's a good thing. And I don't want to get into the book too much. I don't want to give it away. I don't want to spoil it for everybody. We can kind of beat around the bush a little bit about it. And I say it. There's 10 of them, right?
There's 10 books. 10 books. Now, there is the audio books now, too.
Yeah, I saw that. That's probably how I'll finish the series. Is the same guy the star throughout the 10 books, Grant?
Yep. Grant's throughout all 10 books, and I'm Grant. It's pretty thinly veiled. It's really me.
Okay, all right. Yeah, and that's one of my questions I was going to ask you, and I'll skip ahead to that. I was going to ask you, is there some personal connections as to how you come about with the idea for these books? Did you just pull that out of thin air, or have you got some personal experience that helped you to figure this out?
Well, 97% of book one is true, and I never thought anyone would read this. I never really thought I'd write a book, and then I didn't think I'd write 10. I'll explain how it all happened. It's the Easter Bunny, and yes, that makes sense. You don't have a lunatic guest on the line, don't worry. I just started writing about what I know, which is me and people I know, and I'm in the political business here in Olympia, and I'm a lawyer and lobbyist and stuff. Don't worry, for good causes, and
good.
There are a couple of them, and guys like Mache and Dave Taylor, who I know you know, are the kind of people that I associate with, and so I started writing about what I see here in the political process. Some of it is what friends of mine have seen and heard, you know, being in meetings and that sort of thing. Started writing about me, you know, being this suburban slug. I mean, I grew up in a rural area and then went to the city and decided to be a professional and be a lawyer and stuff. And that's pretty shallow. And you know, that whole suburban life is pretty unsustainable. And so I get back to my country roots, and I see all these things going on and realize that this economy and this country in general and political system and social system is really fragile, and something is going to break it apart because this ain't going on forever. And so it's that realization, and then a bunch of things happen. I've got a real team of guys, good guys, all civilians, just salt of the earth guys, and got to my cabin, which really exists. And prepare up the community there and join up with a friend of mine who happens to be a Green Beret. I'm not a military guy by any means. Don't want to imply that.
Yeah.
And there's some good guys and some bad guys, and there's a big fight. And Washington has a new flag with a "Don't Tread on Me" symbol on it. So that tells you who won.
Good. You know, as you got along, and he got about halfway, well, a little less than halfway through the first book there, and I started seeing this transformation, and that's why I wanted to ask you that, because the style in which it's written, and I don't know if it's the style or just the feeling, the inspiration, I guess, that I got while you was reading it. I got to thinking, you know, this would be kind of hard for the average guy to just pull out of thin air. And that's why I wanted to ask you that question, because it seemed like it seemed very personal, that you was very in touch with this character when you started writing about his transformation when he woke up one day and said, "Geez, what a waste of air that I am right now," and started really being gung ho and had the means to change his life and get squared away there. And I thought my favorite part of this book is that 20 or 30 pages right there where this transformation was taking place. I really enjoyed that part.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's all true. And people say, "Oh, this is so realistic," and they think I'm creative or just, I don't know what they think. And
you just wrote a journal, basically.
One of the examples of a lack of creativity, everybody thinks that I'm, you know, a genius fiction writer and I'm just writing about friends of mine, is everybody's favorite character is Pao, the 6-foot Korean gunfighter who sells insurance. He's a real guy, one of my best friends.
Oh, really?
And people think I made this up and I must be, you know, some Hollywood guy that creates interesting characters. He's a really interesting guy. He's 6 feet tall. He's born in Korea and he's an amazing gunfighter and gun instructor. Never been in the military, and he sells insurance. And that's the kind of thing that you just can't make up, you know? You just can't make that stuff up. And started writing about him and other people like him that I know. And I realized as I was writing this that I've known all these amazing people, and it all comes together in a coherent story. And I mentioned the Easter Bunny earlier. I should follow up on that because everyone's going to be wondering, you know, what that's all about. I said that, I didn't really set out to write a book or anything, and that's true. I was preparing in secret, I had to do that because my wife wasn't really into it. She thought I was a lunatic, actually. That's a common thing. There are a lot of guys and some women out there that have, you know, their wife or husband thinks they're a lunatic, and that's really resonated with a lot of people. But so I was preparing in secret, and I realized I needed, you know, an explanation for when there was a bad situation that's coming. I think we can talk about that too. But why? And then at that time we would bug in because we didn't have a cabin. Why all this stuff showed up? You know, all this food and ammunition and stuff and medical supplies. And I had to have an explanation for where it came from. And so I thought, well, I'm going to let her save face, because if I say I was right and you were wrong and, you know, this is the way it's going to be, it's not going to work very well. And, you know, I need her. I mean, be a team and everything. I don't need to, you know, do a Snoopy dance and say, you know, ha, ha, ha. So came up with the Easter Bunny. And my explanation was going to be, honey, the Easter Bunny dropped this by. And I thought, well, okay, it's a pretty important speech I'd be given, right? You know what I mean? This is a pretty big time in a crisis, big crossroads. And so I started, you know, doing little bullet points on a post-it note about what I would say. It would be why I prepared, what's happening now, and how we're going to get through it. And when you think about it, that's pretty much the story of everything, you know, from a prepper perspective. And that one page, or that one post-it note became a page, became 2 pages. And then I thought, well, shoot, I've never written fiction before. So I don't know, I'll just write up a chapter and it'll be the Easter Bunny speech. That's what the chapter will be called. And that became 2 chapters, and pretty soon wrote a book and wrote 10 books and couldn't stop writing. I'm absolutely convinced it's inspired by God. I mean, a lot of the plot lines and the characters and the dialogue, I'll be honest, it's really good, and I don't think it came from me, so I'm not complimenting myself. I mean, it just flowed out there, and the the books have been incredibly successful. I mean, the audiobooks are, you know, bestsellers and things like that. So obviously the story's good, but I'm not taking any credit for it. I was the guy at the keyboard, and a guy was moving the fingers around and trying to get the message out that people need to prepare. And there's some other messages too involved. So that's how the Easter Bunny inspired this. So I wanted to let your listeners know that you did not, as I say, book a lunatic guest tonight.
Yeah, well, Glenn, I think, you know, there's a good many of us. I'm sure you know, or at least have heard, I'm sure you know Anthony Bosworth, right?
Sure. And, good man. $200 fine. We're going to appeal that.
Yeah. And several good, really, really solid Patriots up there. And here in Arizona, we've got our share of them here, too, and they're scattered around the country. And one common theme between the, you know, 99.7% of us is that we feel that we are very much doing what God wants us to do. We're comfortable. We're, you know, regardless of what anyone says, derogatory, we can't be talked out of it, because we know that our guidance comes from a higher source. We really, we're like you. We really do feel that. So I guess as you started this book, well, I guess you kind of answered my question. You stole a lot of my thunder here by saying that this book is true. This, at least this first one. I was going to ask you about the, you know, where you got the inspiration from it and why you wrote the book. And then when you tell me that, well, that's all pretty much true. So that answers all my questions. So Glenn, it's been nice having you on here.
Yeah, that's right. See you later, Cole.
So what about the rest of the other nine books?
The reason book one is true, and I can't say that about, the next nine books, is book one takes place in the past and the present. And that's the transformation, and then watching all the conditions in the country. And of course, in this book, it's looking at Washington State. So it's looking at, you know, the condition. And by the way, everything that happens in the book about Washington State, you know, applies to other states too. And watching, you know, the spending too much money and the political corruption and all that kind of stuff that, you know, all your listeners are familiar with. So that all, you know, is present and past tense. Then the big dramatic collapse and all that happens thereafter is the part that, you know, hasn't happened yet. So it can't be true if I wrote it in the past. I mean, there have been some predictions that have come true, but to be honest, I mean, it wasn't hard. I mean, if you pay attention to how messed up government is and things are doing, and how there are plenty of people in this country who've had enough. When you put those things together, a lot of the, you know, I don't even want to call them predictions, a lot of the things I write about are just projections out into the future of what we're going to see and what we are seeing. So yeah, that's why only book one is true. I'll tell you one thing, and this is, I'm not going to take credit. I don't think I'm any kind of prophet or anything. Again, you know,
I was going to mention on here that you're talking about that. I was going to say that some of this stuff seems almost prophetic for what I feel is coming down and what's going on, so I think I know what you're saying. I agree with it. You know, go ahead.
Well, no, it's crazy. I wrote about the state auditor of Washington State, and I didn't have the actual state auditor in mind, who's state auditor at the time. And I wrote about the state auditor, you know, getting arrested and having to leave office. Well, fast forward a couple of years, right now the state auditor of Washington has been indicted.
So, really?
I mean, but I'm going to, you know, there's stuff like that. But I don't want to leave anyone with the impression that I think I'm any kind of a prophet. But you hit on it, what it is. And that is, this book describes what people are feeling. And one of the best, you know, examples of that is later on in the books, you'll find that the good guys, Patriots, they adopt a slogan and they go out and they spray paint stuff, graffiti, to show the population that, you know, they're not alone. And the thing they spray paint, the slogan is, "I miss America." And that phrase has resonated. I mean, we see it all over the place. People are making T-shirts and doing all kinds of stuff, and with it, which I totally encourage. I mean, knock yourselves out. You know, please get the message out. But it's that thing that really you know, people can relate to. I miss America because I sure do miss America. I want it back, and I'm willing to work to get it back, and it's coming back, at least in parts of the current boundaries of the United States. And so, yeah, I miss America as an example. I bet you feel that, don't you?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, sir. I feel it so much. And I, you know, you're talking about it is coming back in some regards. And I was reading tonight, there was another sheriff in, I forgot where he was at, Oklahoma or somewhere, that is waiving all the fees for the CCW because he's trying to encourage more people to do it. And that's happening all over the country. Not everybody's waiving fees, but sheriffs all over are encouraging people to be armed and to take care of yourself. And this is the first time ever in the history since George Washington's days that we've had sheriffs and political elected officials all over the country are telling people, you are ultimately responsible for your safety. You need to be armed. If you are worried about what's going on, then you need to start, you put on your big boy panties and learn to take care of it. And I think it's awesome what we're seeing here.
Boy, and I'd add Detroit and Milwaukee to that list of places. It's not just, you know, the South and the Southwest and the West. My goodness, Detroit. I mean, yeah, you talk about a place where people need to be armed. You know, and yeah. I saw on your Facebook page a story that a lot of us have been talking about, and that is 100 million firearms sold, according to the NICS checks, since President Obama took office. And, boy, if that doesn't tell a story. I mean, there's only 300-plus million people in this country, and in 7 years, you sell 100 million firearms. And, of course, with the NICS checks, that's a very reliable figure. It's not like somebody's estimating anything.
Yeah.
And probably more than 100 million when you think of face-to-face transfers. And, of course, NICS, if you buy multiple guns at once, it only is one NICS. But you know what I'm saying? There's at least 100 million firearms. And we're seeing this where, you know, predominantly rural areas, southern, southwestern, and western areas are more and more just, you know, going on their own. Not entirely, obviously. We have an integrated economy, integrated infrastructure, all that. But I really love seeing states passing laws that nullify federal firearms laws and make it a crime for state and local officials to assist the federal government in enforcing unconstitutional laws. I haven't been alive, you know, that long. I'm in my mid-40s, but I'm telling you, I never thought I'd see this kind of thing. And
yeah.
it's a historic period. And there's so many bad things going on, but there are pockets of good things. And I think that the pockets tells us a lot because it's these areas that we're talking about, you know, where you're broadcasting from and where you're from originally. Those are going to be the places that are going to have the good guys and the patriots, and there are going to be plenty of places in this country where America's still going to exist. And there may be plenty of places, Chicago, L.A., New York, all those bad, horrible places, that America doesn't exist right now, and it's going to exist even less. And that's the big conflict I see coming, is along those sorts of lines. And it write about it in the book, and it takes place, and I describe it, especially how it unfolds in Washington State. And I don't want any of this to happen. I'm a very peaceful man. I mean, I'm a Christian. I don't want to hurt anybody. I mean, innocent people and all that, you know, don't want to hurt anybody, but
don't want to be hurt either.
Stuff's coming.
Yep. There's a storm brewing. There's no doubt about it. And I think that, America, it's missing as far as political and stuff in areas. But I think as long as America exists in our hearts, that America will always exist. As long as there's somebody still alive, as long as I'm still alive, America and the Constitution resides in my heart. And they can tear it up. They can take the original Constitution. They can destroy it. They can take every copy of it, take it offline. They can do whatever they want to. But the Constitution will still exist in my mind, in my heart. And that's the that's what I live by. That's what I do. They can't make that go away. That's something that we cannot allow these people to think that they've ever gotten the best of us by taking some of those things away from us.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And and they're trying.
They're trying hard, man. They're trying awfully hard. They, some of the things that, and this whole, there's so many things, and we talk about this stuff every night on the show, and that's the, you know, this whole quote unquote refugee situation and the United Nations and the southern border and the, you know, social and economic collapse, and we've just got so many things going on right now. And if any one of those comes to fruition, then the rest of them is going to follow right behind it. I think all of these things will escalate immediately if one of them starts going down in a big way. You know, if let's say you get up one morning and EBT cards don't work and the banks are closed, and then when that happens more than a few hours, then we're going to start seeing some action in this country. I think it'll happen pretty quickly.
You're so right. You're so right. And you know, I think our critics like to dismiss people like you and me as conspiracy theorists. I don't think there's any gigantic conspiracy out there, and here's why. There doesn't need to be. And you're exactly right. EBT cards, we saw that about 2 years ago in October.
Yep.
I'm sure you remember that. You know,
yes,
just
sir.
For a few hours in a couple of states. And you're right. A matter of a couple hours, people were busting up Walmarts and stealing stuff, and it was contained pretty quickly. By the way, I find the timing of that kind of interesting. You know, when the so-called government shutdown was going on, I think, or right before that, I think that was a little message to the Republicans.
Yeah, I think it was a test.
Go on. Yeah, it could go on, and they get blamed for it. The collapse scenario that I talk about in the books and that I think is going to happen is not a gigantic, cataclysmic, dramatic collapse. Now, it's bad and horrible and all that other stuff. But what I mean is it's not like, you know, a meteor strikes or something like that. I foresee a partial collapse. And what I mean by that is government's out of money, EBT cards getting turned off, or you know, the amount of money on EBT cards remaining the same and inflation going really high, so the EBT cards basically don't buy anything. Something like that. Massive political upheaval, very violent protests, a surge, human surge of illegal aliens, primarily from the South. And then, you know, all the catastrophic effects that has. And then the main thing is the police can't handle it all. I have a lot of friends in law enforcement. I'm not, you know, anti-government. I want to keep the government within constitutional limits. And
right.
There's some good oath keeper constitutional military and law enforcement guys that I'm good friends with. But anyway, when the police can't do it all, and of course, after about 72 hours, they're going to be exhausted and go home to their families.
Yeah.
When it can't be controlled. And you were saying it, you know, about how it's going to happen. It's going to be big and everything. You're exactly right, because there's a thin veneer in society right now, thin veneer, and when there's no police around, the bad guys are going to figure it out. And not only bad guys who are current bad guys, that's a bad enough problem. I mean, we could talk for about 2 hours about gangs, by the
mm-hmm.
way, but gangs will go nuts, and that's a huge, huge problem. But I think even a bigger problem are all the people out there that maybe aren't active criminals now. They are just dirt bags. And when they can get away with stuff, they're going to get away with stuff. And that neighbor of theirs they've never liked, whose dog always barks, they're going to go over to their house and, you know, do some damage. There's going to be all kinds of stuff like that, and just crimes of opportunity. There's going to be, you know, all kinds of bad stuff from not career criminals, but they're going to end up being, you know, they're going to start their career
yeah,
when the police
exactly.
are around. And it's going to be mayhem, and that's what I see as the really big problem is the mayhem. And in my books, and I don't know, it may not happen. Again, I'm not Nostradamus or anything like that, but the utilities stay on for the most part. And I think the reason that happens is the government, as little control as they have, they're going to want really bad to keep the electricity and the lights on and the water going. Because if that's not going, people have nothing to lose and they'll turn on them. Now, that may not turn out to be true. I can see all kinds of very reasonable scenarios in which the utilities go out. So I'm not, you know, dogmatic about that, but I see it as a Detroit on steroids, just a horrible Venezuela kind of situation. Argentina in 2000 would be another example. And you have gangs, and you have some police and military elements acting like gangs, and all that kind of stuff. So that's, it doesn't take a meteor strike for things to get really ugly in this country, because we're so soft and dependent and so fragile, so fragile.
Yeah, there's, and I've never ceased to be amazed. Every single day I see people that are like Grant was before the transformation there, and I look and they are so freaking helpless. They're so, it's so pathetic to see them try. They can't do anything, where they can't change a tire. They can't put on tire chains. They don't know, they don't know anything. And when this comes down to where we have to survive by the knowledge that we have, man, we're going to be stacking bodies up like cordwood here across the nation.
It's going to be awful. You know, and a great example of what you're talking about, the state of Oregon, they can't pump their own gas. It's all
I know. I couldn't believe that.
I love Eastern Oregon. A lot of good patriots, cowboys, ranchers, all kinds of good people, but the state's messed up. Now, I say that to say this. Here in Washington State, there was a person from Oregon with Oregon license plates going up to the gas station, and this woman got out, and it was a nice SUV, nice rig. She, you know, she looked like she was an educated, intelligent person. And she got out, and she didn't know how to pump gas, because she'd never had to. And she, it's so funny, she went up to the pump, and she took her purse out or her wallet or whatever and started waving it around. She expected the magic radio waves to, I don't know, start pumping her gas or some crazy thing. And I thought, and I looked back, and I thought, and I was trying not to laugh. Of course, you know, I'm a UW Husky, and the Oregon Ducks, there's a little bit of a rivalry there. But I thought to myself, when stuff hits the fan, man, we're dead. I didn't say that to her. I mean, that's a rude thing to say. And I just marveled at how we could let ourselves become this dependent. And I'll be honest, I'm not a homesteader. I don't know anything about wiring and a ton of other things. And I'm dependent on other people. I'll be the first to admit, I live in the suburbs. But my goodness, I know how to split wood.
Well, all of us are to some degree. But, I mean, I know people that know nothing, Glenn, nothing.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, all of us. You know, I'm not a computer programmer or electrician or anything like that, and I'll have to trade some of the skills that I have for some that you have or something. But I know people that, I don't know how they walk across the street without tripping on the white line. I just I don't get it. You know, I went to Oregon. I've been through there several times, but I never stop. And I went last summer. Matter of fact, I was going up to the big rally in Olympia. On December 13th, and last year, and I stopped at this little gas station, and I got out and run my card in there, and stuck the nozzle in the tank, and little girl comes out and says, "Can I help you?" And I said, "Well, no, I think I got it." And she said, "No, you don't understand. I have to help you." And I said, "Well, then wash the windshield or something." I didn't know what she was talking about. Really, I had no idea. What do you mean you have to help me? I was pumping gas before your daddy was born, girl. And you're telling me you have to come out and tell me that? I was livid. Couldn't believe it. Anyway, she said, state law, we have to pump it for you. And I said, well, I'll be damned. So I make sure now when I'll fill up in Idaho before I ain't stopping in Oregon again.
Well, that's me too. When I go through Oregon, I fuel up in Washington State and hope I don't need to have any gas pump. It's become a thing now, you know, my kids. They're like, Dad, please don't talk about Oregon. You can't pump your... What's socialism, Daddy?
Let's go across the river and I'll show you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That still floors me. I just couldn't get it. I'm at that time I was 58 years old. I got it. I can handle it. Oh well.
You know, there's two parts to what you're talking about people having not skills and not having skills. And one is, of course, not having skills. You know, the second thing that I think might get just as many people killed that are not prepared is the mental shock.
Yep.
You're going to be waiting for FEMA to drive up and hand them some Big Macs or whatever in whatever bizarre fantasy world they live in. And this stuff, I mean, if the water's not running, and they're just going to wait when the government says on the radio, you know, just be patient. The repairs are going to be done. They're going to actually believe that, and because they can't conceive of doing it on their own. They don't know how to do anything, and they don't think they have to do anything, and they don't expect to have to do anything. And that's going to get a lot of people.
Yes, it will. Yes, it will. And we see that today already. And under much, much more minor circumstances than a full-fledged collapse. And people, you know, they get mad and they just stomp and cuss and say, "How dare you? What do you mean?" You know, they're no savvy. They just have no idea. And it's amazing to me. And they're, you know, what are they going to last? 72 hours, you know, maybe a week, some of the more hardy ones, but, you know, they're going to go pretty quick.
Well, yeah, and in the case of water, you know, 3 days, I mean, depending on what the outside temperature is, 3 days is a pretty good hallmark. You know, they'll have a little bit of water. I mean, they'll have their, I don't know, their fancy sparkling, you know, whatever, glacier water or something like that they might have in their fridge. And that'll be about it. Yeah. They'll get hungry, they'll get thirsty, they'll get crazy, and then the rumors will spread around, hey, you know, that family over there, they're hoarding food, you know, because they have two or three or whatever days worth of food, and then we're going to see violence, too. I mean, that's, of course, always a problem when things get scarce. And I don't know about you, I mean, I don't get hungry, I mean, too much, but I know that when I've in the past, been really, really hungry, and I did some search and rescue stuff in high school. That's in the book. That's all true. And we would be, you know, out in the woods for a day or two and, you know, go through food pretty quickly. And you get really hungry, and you're working really hard, and it's maybe dark, and you're tired. Your mind starts to do kind of weird things. I mean, nothing out of hand, but, I mean, you're not yourself is my point. And a lot of people missing a couple meals – that's never happened to them before, they're going to be different animals. And I'll tell you something else, the prescription medications that a huge chunk of this country's on, when that's disrupted.
Yep.
Pharmacies only have, depending on what kind of medication it is, maybe a couple days supply. I mean, for a lot of obscure stuff, they, you know, probably only have like one, you know, I don't know, month's dose or whatever it is. They don't have much. And we're going to see all kinds of people that are our neighbors, that are really nice people, that after a couple of days are snarling animals. I mean, it's gonna be a series of mind-blowing experiences.
Yep, I agree 100%. And they'll these people will you know, not being able to. What I was asked here just now, looking ahead here on the chat room, someone had asked, do you plan on following this up? Have you got another book in mind? Are you gonna? You said these were successful. Are you gonna keep on with it? Or, you know, I think that this is, you know, everything is reasonably priced and it's well written. And several people have told me that the writing got better as the series progressed. And which, you know, that goes back to what you were saying a while ago. Maybe you're just a scribe, you know. I think that those of us that can, that have the ability and the knowledge to do it, are beginning to come out of the woodwork around here and start sharing this and trying to wake people up and trying to get them on board here, try to cut down not only on the of course, we care about their lives and their families' lives and all that, but, you know, to be very, very blunt about this, the more people that are prepared, the less I'm going to have to kill, is what it was going to boil down to. You know, the less that are going to be attacking for the slightest little thing, for a bottle of water, for a Snickers bar. And we're gonna. There's not gonna be. You're not gonna stand at the door and say, "Well, I'm sorry, I don't have any. Just go away." Or, "Yeah, I do have one, but you can't have it." So going back to wherever you came from, they'll be back that night, you know. So I think the more people that we can prepare with classes and books and lessons and radio shows and whatever the case may be, then the more that it helps all of us.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and the last thing we want to do is have to, you know, shoot people. But yeah, of course, if they're a threat, then it's a pretty easy decision. You mentioned the chat room and more books. This is a bit of an anticlimactic downer, but it's the truth. I don't have any plans to write anymore, and the simple reason is I don't think God is asking me to do it. I think the message got into the books, and the books got out so widely circulated that I've done what he wanted me to do, at least on this. I mean, he wants me to be a good man and all that. Specifically, when I was in the middle of writing these things, I mean, it's 3,600 pages. It's 91 hours of audiobooks, all 10 books. It's a tremendous, tremendous amount of writing. I would get up at, 1:51 was the earliest I remember getting up, but I get up at 3-4 in the morning. I'd write a couple hours. By the way, it took 2.5 years. I wrote this entire thing without my wife knowing I was writing it.
Really?
And when it got published, I had to say, oh, by the way, honey.
I really didn't get up for warm milk all those nights.
Yeah. And so, and I would sit there and I would have these ideas flowing through my head, and I always had little scraps of paper around me, and I would write down ideas and outline stuff, and I could not stop writing and thinking about this. And that's not happening right now. So that's telling me that God isn't using me right now. He's probably using a variety of other people to get this message out. And, you know, you should read their books and listen to their podcasts and their radio shows. You know what I mean? It's not an exclusive thing with me. And so if there's a message that he wants to get out, and I think with these 10 books, at least the messages I think are all laid out there. I mean, you need to prep, and there are good guys and bad guys, and here's what the bad guys are going to try to do, and here's stuff that the good guys will do to counter that and be successful. And one of the other overarching messages is don't go out and just start killing people. Now, I know you and me know that, but I mean, some others out there may not. And yes, you need to use force to defend yourself, and quite a bit of force in some circumstances, but don't turn this into the French Revolution, where it was a bunch of revenge killings that went on for decades, and look how messed up France has been for a couple hundred years. So, you know, those sorts of messages. I think I got it all out, at least on these topics. So I don't plan on writing anymore. I'd like to. It would be fun. But if it's for me and for fun, that's not a good enough reason. needs to get out. And I think I did it.
Well, you've done the one that I've read, you've done a damn fine job. There's no doubt about it. And I'm anxious to read the rest of them or listen to the rest of them. I'll probably do it while I'm driving and stuff. I never seem to have the time to just, it's hard for me to sit down and read, but I can be working in the shop and doing another thing with my Bluetooth on and be listening to this stuff. And that's probably how it's going to happen. But back to what you said about the revenge killings and stuff, I think in the beginning that will be rampant. I think it'll be everywhere. You know, it'll be either because of race or because of law enforcement or because of political or because of sexual preferences or whatever. I think that there will be a ton of that once they realize that there will be no repercussions. Once law enforcement is so busy doing other things, and excuse me, goodness, I think that'll be in the first I have no idea, 30, 60, 90 days, that will be everywhere.
You know, it's not just you, and I totally agree with your theory. We can look at other parts of the world and recent examples and see what happens when there's a breakdown like we're talking about. Classic example of all that revenge stuff would be Bosnia.
Right.
And when that was going on, and, you know, I have friends who were there as part of the military effort, and they'll tell you that there was all kinds of that stuff going on. And by the way, some of those people that were going out and settling scores and you know, killing people, when order started getting restored, those thugs were some of the first to get snuffed out. You know, a counter thug force got them. And, there's that, so we know this is going to happen, and it always astounds me. I talk to what I call normal people, right? They're not like me and you. Yeah. They're not preppers or anything, and we don't get into it this detailed because then they know a prepper and Olympia, Washington, that's a really bad idea to let on to, but a lot of people think that America, it's just such a great place that we'd never do bad stuff. And I love America, and I think America is better than any other country on earth. But they seem to take it to some kind of unwarranted level where, well, it's America, bad stuff doesn't happen. They don't mean that we're great and we're decent moral people, because by and large this country's not. I think we all agree on that. But mm-hmm. they just think that bad stuff, I mean, revenge killings and, you know, sexual predators running around and stuff, well, that happens, like, you know, in the third world. It doesn't happen here. No, no, no. We're all human beings, and I think it's going to be worse here because we're so dependent. We're on so many medications. We have such a, in large parts of this country, a welfare entitlement mentality. I think it's going to make the third world look like child's play, what happens in the United States.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. And it's just a matter now of when it's going to start and what the catalyst is going to be. There's no, you know, I believe that we're, and I think you probably do too, that there is no, we're past the point of no return. It is absolutely going to happen. It's just a matter of when.
Oh, yeah, and people ask me sometimes, they say, oh, well, what can we do to fix this? And I've told every, and I hate saying this, I'm not the guy who likes to be, you know, the downer on this. Nothing. That's what we can't vote enough people in. I mean, obviously there's some local elections and sometimes statewide initiatives and referenda and stuff that are important. I'm not saying boycott, you know, the political process, but take me, for example, in Washington State, and take the presidential race. We already know that all 12 electoral votes from the state of Washington are going to the Democrats. So there's really nothing I'm going to do. Well, I am put up a yard sign. I mean, and then my neighbors will hate me more here. I mean, but so we can't vote our, and as far as it being a certainty, oh, I'm sorry, what?
Do what?
So I thought I heard you say something. There's a bit of an echo.
Oh.
As far as the certainty goes, there's a mathematical certainty to all of this, and that's the debt. And that's compound interest. And that's the amount of treasury bills, that is debt, the government needs to sell, that is, they need to borrow, how much money they need to borrow every single day to just roll over the debt that's already out there. You know, countries out there, I don't know, like China, that maybe has some of its own economic problems, and it's a communist country and doesn't like us very much. All they have to do is quit buying our debt, and the wheels fall off really, really quick. And by the way, China, in this summer, we saw this, they've really, really slowed down the amount of U.S. debt they're buying. So this isn't some theoretical conspiracy theory thing. This is like looking at World Bank figures. I mean, this is not a secret. And so it cannot be sustained. I mean, you know all the figures, you know all the, you know, GDP this, and Social Security is, the disability thing is already insolvent here in 2015. It pays out more than it takes in, and then the rest of it, sort of the retirement part of Social Security, comes insolvent, I want to say 2019. And there isn't enough money out there for the world to lend the United States. And why should they? What in the heck? Why would China lend us money when they know they're not going to get paid? So it can't go on forever. I mean, it's like that, you know, that hopefully we don't have one, but like that totally crazy drug addicted uncle, you know, who's like got 52 credit cards or something. That's really what we're talking about. And that doesn't last very long. And that's where we're at.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there was a really good indicator, what you were talking about a while ago, 3 hours, the EBT cards were down 3 hours. And if that were to happen for 8 hours, or even we could just keep it at 3 hours and have it happen nationwide instead of, you know, three cities or whatever it was. If that was nationwide for 3 hours or 8 hours, geez, there's no telling what would happen there.
Well, you know, for I hope I get my facts right. I saw this a while ago, but I'm pretty sure these numbers are right. Think of how many Walmarts there are, you know, and there's probably a Walmart near where everybody listening lives, right? So in your mind's eye, I think
pretty
that Walmart.
Much.
As I understand the figure, for every Walmart out there, I think it's 14,000 people are on EBT cards. So for every Walmart, think of 14,000 people in your, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 mile radius of that Walmart, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Not having stuff and wanting stuff and wanting it pretty bad. Now, how many police officers? That's another thing. You know, we have so few police officers. I mean, as a per capita situation, there's no way that 30 or 40 police officers, making that number up, but that's probably about right, are going to hold back 14,000 people. That's what we're talking about. It's a matter of numbers. It's not a matter of conspiracy theories. You don't need conspiracy theories because math is math.
Yeah, we're already done with that.
Yeah. Well, this explains why 100 million guns have been sold. People get this. You know, I mean, we were talking about a lot of general population don't have any skills and everything. I think that's all true. And but at some level, a bunch of Americans are understanding. Now, I mean, not the majority, don't get me wrong, but I mean, a good chunk of America is understanding this. And I have, you know, friends who don't know, because, I mean, Glenn Tate's a pen name, and I'm in political business, and the last thing I'm going to do is have it out that, you know, I'm writing books about the collapse of the United States. You know, that's a really terrible career move for me. And so they don't know anything about me or anything, but they know that I shoot. I mean, you know, they'll say, what'd you do this weekend? I say, oh, we had a handgun class, and I taught the legal portion of it, or we did a rifle class or whatever it is. And people know I shoot, and all kinds of people. I mean, even, you know, the liberal ones, some of them are coming up to me, and San Bernardino was a catalyst for this, and they're saying, so I'm thinking about buying a gun, you know, what kind of gun should I get, and all those kinds of things. And so I'm seeing, you know, a fair number of people getting the very beginning little inklings of what they need to do, which is that realization that, you know, the police won't always be there. And if you've got that realization, you're, you know, you're headed in the right direction.
Yeah, you're ahead of a lot of your neighbors.
There's some hope.
You know, I wish that more people, somebody just told me, and somebody in the chat room, I'd have to go back and look, I talked to so many people, but that someone was buying, that there were a lot of non-gun people panicking and buying, you know, pocket pistols and stuff, and just getting away from the theme of this conversation here a little bit. I can't stress enough, if you're going to get a handgun, you expect to be even marginally effective in a self-defense scenario, you have got to get training. This is not something that comes natural. You have a natural instinct to survive. You do not have a natural instinct to operate a handgun or an AR-15 or anything else in a manner that is fast, efficient, and conducive to saving your life if something were to happen. So whoever's listening out there that's thinking about this, you put money into guns, you put money into food, you put money into everything else that you do, put money into training. That is so difficult for people to do because it's not a tangible thing. It's not something they can touch. It's not something they can clean and put in the closet or show to their friends. And it's hard for them to spend money on. But you've got to get good quality training wherever you're at from somebody.
Yeah, I mean, sell a gun if you need to and get some training and yeah, you need to do that. The other cool thing is there's a lot of training. It's not everything you need, but there's a lot of good introductory stuff, you know, on the internet and DVDs and that. There's no substitute for trigger time. Don't get me wrong. You need to do that too, but you can get, and there's some free resources out there. And not only do you need to know how to, you know, draw and put a shot where it needs to be and know the safety rules and know what the back stop is for all the shots and all those things, the physical things. You also have to do the mental thing. And I don't know how you could go your whole life and you've never shot a gun, and then all of a sudden you have to draw and shoot somebody. You're going to be thinking all kinds of things like, is this loud? Is this going to hurt my ears? I mean, it's just like on TV where you hit a bad guy and he like explodes. And so you're going to be thinking all these dumb things that you wouldn't think if you just went and shot, for goodness sakes, right? I mean, you have to do this. It's like you can't learn how to drive a car by just, you know, taking driver's ed classes in a classroom. You got to get behind the wheel and feel what it's like and be confident and all those other things. So the one time in your life when you're going to really, really need to have been trained and to be in the right mental state is when your life depends on it. And that's the one thing that a lot of people don't seem to think is important enough to spend a little bit of money and time on. And it's too bad. And here's the other thing. They're missing out on something that's fun.
Exactly.
Let's not forget
the
fun factor, right?
Yep. Well, Glenn, have you got a website or anything you want to share with us and places to get your book? I need to wrap this up here right quick.
Sure. 299 days, 299days.com. Just Google 299 days, and all kinds of stuff will pop up. Amazon for the books, paperback and Kindle, and Audible, and Amazon for the audio books. Facebook page, we communicate a lot. And we reach out to people, is 299 days, parentheses of the book. And, bottom line, Google, and that'll get you to every place you need to be.
All right. Sounds good. I'll probably sometime in the spring be back up in Washington teaching another class up there. I'll, make it a point to try to, excuse me, Dad, come on, what's going on here? Try to get up there a day or so early or stay a day or so late and spend some time up there and come and look you up, and maybe we can get Autumn to hook us up there, come up and spend some time.
Oh, heck yeah.
Bust a few
caps.
That'd
be great. Maybe. Have you out to the real cabin if you get to the west side. That'd be fun.
Okay. Well, I will make it a point to do that then. Glenn, I appreciate it. It's been a great great conversation. It was a quick hour.
So. Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, Cope. It's great.
You bet. All right, and Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas, sir.
All right. Goodbye. Thank you.
All right. You see you. Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to get out of here. Amy will come back with me here in a little bit, and we're going to talk about Christmas a little bit and play some music and goof around here a little bit. So give me a little bit of time here, and I'll be right back. Okay, let's call it a day. Thank you for joining me. Join me every Monday through Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time for the Shooting Bench right here on Just Measures Radio Network. Let freedom.
Bells will be ringing the sad, sad news. Oh, what a Christmas to have the blues. My baby's gone. I have no friends to wish me greetings. Once again, choirs will be singing Silent Night, Christmas carol by candlelight. Please come home for Christmas. Please come home for Christmas. If not for Christmas, by New Year's night, friends and relations send salutations. Sure as the stars shine above, for this is Christmas. Yes, Christmas, my dear, the time of year to be with the one you love. So won't you tell me you'll never more own Christmas and New Year. We'll find you home. There'll be no more sorrow, no grief and pain, and I'll be happy, happy once again. There'll be no more sorrow, no grief and pain, and I'll be happy Christmas once again.